Talking about a foreign government that using technical intrusion and lots of other methods tried to shape the way we think, we vote, we act. That is a big deal. And people need to recognize it. It's not about Republicans or Democrats. They're coming after America, which I hope we all love equally. They want to undermine our credibility in the face of the world. They think that this great experiment of ours is a threat to them, and so they're going to try to run it down and dirty it up as much as possible. That's what this is about, and they will be back because we remain, as difficult as we can be with each other, we remain that shining city on the hill, and they don't like it.
That's former FBI Director James Comey testifying on Capitol Hill today. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. So what really happened during this hearing with the Senate Intelligence Committee? And what does it all mean? Well, my guests are Niels Lesniewski. He's a senior Senate reporter for The Roll Call. Dr. Kenesha Grant, a Howard University political science professor. Now joining us, former Prince George's County State's Attorney Glenn Ivey. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Glenn, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it. Glenn, can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, I most certainly can. Thank you so much. Glenn, from your perspective, who is in trouble after this hearing legally, if at all? Is it the president? Is it James Comey? Or neither one or both?
It sounds like Jeff Sessions is probably in the most difficult position at the moment, based on some of the things that Comey refused to answer in the open session. I think with respect to the president, the obstruction of justice issue, which I think there's a lot of smoke, I don't know that Comey's testimony moved the ball forward on that today. He'd already, released a lot of that information. But, there were two witnesses yesterday, Coates and Rogers, who were a part of the Trump administration and national intelligence team, that refused to answer questions about what the president had asked them about, had asked them to do. At some level, I think Mueller's going to need to get to the bottom of what those conversations were about.
Dr. Grant, what did we learn about the president today, if anything?
I think we learned that he talks to his staff the same way I talk to my students. So I have a lot of conversations with them about things I hope they will do. And every time I talk to them about things I hope they will do, it means that you should absolutely do this. Like, I hope you write better papers in the future. I think that it lets us know. So the Republicans are trying to spin this story about the president as a person who doesn't really know how to do government, which is not something that I think would have held water under the Obama administration. And I think that they are right that this demonstrates they absolutely have no idea how the American government works. I don't think they have any idea how many pieces of the government there are, what checks and balances are, what they mean, and how the government is bigger than any one individual.
Now, Niels, I want you to listen to this because you were there and tell me what this was about. This is John McCain talking to James Comey.
The Clinton investigation was a completed investigation. This investigation was underway, still going when I was fired. So it's nowhere near in the same place. At least it wasn't when I was.
But it's still ongoing.
Correct.
What was going on with John McCain? I mean, this is almost a side story. Social media blew up about this. People were asking whether or not he was ill. He was dwelling on Hillary Clinton as part of the entire Russian conversation or investigation. What was going on there?
Senator McCain, after the fact, said, and I can admit to having been guilty of this to some extent myself at some point in my life, but he said that he stayed up too late watching the Diamondbacks game last night.
The Arizona Diamondbacks. Okay, well, we'll give him that. I was going to say, what's going on?
No, but what apparently McCain was trying to get at, it was this question of why Comey acted the way he did to be public in denying that there, in saying that the investigation of Clinton was closed, when there's been no similar public statement from him until recently about whether or not Trump was under investigation. And something that perhaps our our legal colleague on the phone can weigh in on maybe too, is the question of whether Comey seems to believe that there's an obligation to report when someone comes under investigation if you previously said they were not. This is something that happened with Hillary. That seems to be something that Comey believes, and I'm not sure I'd ever heard of it from anyone else.
Yeah. What about that, Glenn? He made a comment about duty to report or to update. What's that about?
Yeah, that it's actually highly unusual for the FBI at the director level or the agent level, for that matter, in any investigation to be making a lot of public statements, unless it's maybe at a press conference after an indictment or a conviction. But just to make announcements about, you know, we have an investigation ongoing or we just concluded an investigation, they don't typically do that. And I think part of what Comey did that sort of got that train going was the statements about the Clinton campaign. Boy, I guess it's about a year ago now. And then at the end of the campaign, he said he felt like he had to come back and make another statement because he'd made the previous statement. But that's why DOJ policy is that they don't make those kind of statements to start with. Usually they just leave it to either the attorney general or the prosecutors to make public statements, and the agents stick to the investigation part.
You know, Dr. Grant, we have the facts or the testimony of Mr. Comey. But then we have some really bizarre stories about the goings on in the White House, where he talked about being alone with the president. And I'm not talking about the first time at Trump Tower, where he was telling him about the salacious accusations made by the Russians with prostitutes and all of that. But just what was happening when he was telling, you know, Jeff Sessions and Reince Priebus to leave the room, and in his notes, everything was hyper specific. What do you see there? Is this a businessman, like you said, who just doesn't know how government is supposed to be? Or is this, you know, perhaps somebody who says, I'm going to continue to do what I want?
I think it's somebody who says they continue to do what they want. And I think we know this because of the way he goes about it. So he invites Comey to dinner. They are at dinner in the White House alone, which is kind of amazing. There are so many people in the White House at one time, so many staffers in the White House at one time. It takes work to be in a space alone with anybody. And then in this meeting we're talking about with Jeff Sessions and Reince Priebus comes back to the room to kind of check in and say, hey, you know, this is not normal. Do you want me to check in? Maybe you should stop this. And he's like, no, I'm good. Like, let me continue this meeting. So I think what we're seeing is a president who believes that it's possible to exist in our government in a way that allows him to be not accountable to people, not realizing that there are so many checks and balances and cameras and people around that eventually some of these things are going to come out.
Niels, do Republicans believe Comey? Was there more or less bipartisan support during today's hearing?
There's certainly more than you usually hear. There were some Republicans who were clearly framing their questions in a way that came across as sort of defensive of Trump in terms of, well, the technical legality questions, right? Whether or not the actual obstruction of justice. Well, if it was only one meeting where he was telling you to back off the investigation of Michael Flynn, well, you know, maybe it was just one meeting and there weren't more where he did that. But I think that what's happened, particularly with Richard Burr, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, is they've been working so closely with Comey, and this goes to something that President Trump may not understand, that Comey had been coming and going from the Capitol at least weekly, maybe sometimes even daily, meeting with the Intelligence Committee about the underlying investigation of Russian election meddling. So they know him very, very well, and so this is not some mid-level bureaucrat who no one has ever heard of on Capitol Hill. This is this is a known quantity who they're more likely to believe.
Mm-hmm. Heard them say that over and over and over again. Everybody who had a question started with this long statement about how they thought Comey was a great guy, and I might not agree with you on politics, but I trust you, they said repeatedly. And I think that trust is going to be problematic for Trump because it flies in the face of everything that the media and the, I think, public is starting to believe or understand about how he does things.
Glenn, what do we do with this? And when I say we, I mean the senators, the White House, the president's counsel says that the president has been vindicated. But I mean, does this end here outside of the investigation with Robert Mueller, or is there something else that we should expect to come from this?
Yeah, I don't think it's ended at all. I certainly think, you know, Mueller's just getting started. I think he's still bringing on his staff and the like. Comey, I think, said today that he turned his notes over to Mueller for that investigation. I do think they're going to be follow-up, with respect to Coates and Rogers, the two that testified yesterday I mentioned before. I think Mueller's going to be going for, I would think, at least a year, maybe 2 years at a minimum. I think with respect to the Senate committee, I think it's a tough spot for some of the Senate Republicans to be in. On the one hand, they don't want to appear to have thrown this, President Trump under the bus because they've got a lot of Republican voters in their districts and their states who still want to support him. On the other hand, there's a lot of hair splitting and really kind of tough positions that you have to take. And then finally, I think Comey, the credibility's boosted because he has the contemporaneous notes on the one hand. And on the other hand, Trump's really been the Pinocchio president. I think he's a guy who doesn't have a lot of credibility because he's said things that are just obviously inaccurate so many times, even while he's been president, that I think he's going to have trouble carrying the day on that front.
And I want you to back up just a little bit, because when you were talking about the hearings with the intelligence chiefs yesterday, give me a little bit of civics 101, because there was no Watergate moment yesterday. But how is it that if someone is called before Congress and there are no legal reasons why, they should not answer a question? They just say, it's my opinion that I don't. Is this something, can they be held in contempt of Congress? Why did it just seem to be stalled when they just said they refused to answer?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Congress can hold witnesses in contempt. It's not the most, streamlined process. But they have the authority to do it. I think the question for the senators is going to be, do they really want to spend that much time and energy on doing it? And they may. I think there's a real possibility, depending on how some of this goes down the road, that they'll come back to this and say, you know what, we really do want those questions answered. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you've got Mueller, who's got his investigation ramping up. It's a lot easier for a prosecutor who works with a grand jury every day to deal with the contempt issues if necessary. And I think he's going to take that on in relatively short order.
Niels, your thought about that intelligence hearing yesterday?
Largely the same point. I think, and I hadn't initially thought of it, but if Mueller either was watching or goes back and reads the transcripts of those non-answers, I am probably, if I'm Mueller, I'm probably reaching out to Coates and Admiral Rogers immediately to try and see what's going on there. And I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if that sort of moves ahead more quickly because of those non-answers yesterday. I don't know necessarily that those guys were even on the likely list of witnesses before the grand jury, wherever it was. I think it's out in Alexandria, Virginia at the moment.
But now they could be.
And now they could be.
Interesting. I need to take a break. When we come back, more of this discussion about former FBI Director James Comey testifying before the Senate Intelligence Committee, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drama on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about former FBI Director James Comey, testifying before the Senate Intelligence Committee today. If you have a question or comment, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Grant, do you think that today's hearing moved the needle politically for Donald Trump's supporters, or do you believe this just entrenched and solidified the polarized electorate?
I think it leaves people where they started. I don't think that anybody who supports Donald Trump was listening to Comey's testimony and left it thinking like, wow, I should really question my support for Donald Trump. I will say, though, I had not thought about it until the caller mentioned it, that folks on the other kind of side of the political spectrum might be looking at Comey as a person who's not trustworthy because of his behavior with the Hillary Clinton email. So I was surprised about that. That's something I hadn't thought about. But I don't know that anybody had their opinions changed today. Anybody on either end of the spectrum had their opinions changed as a result of the testimony today.
You mentioned during the break, Niels, about Senator King, the independent from Maine. We saw more of him yesterday than we did today. But talk to me about why you believe he's so significant to this process.
Well, Senator King's background is a bit different. He was the governor of Maine for a fairly long time, but he was also he's a sort of a historian by training and an expert in sort of history. And he was a talk show host for a fair amount of time up in Maine. He hosted a statewide political talk program. And so he tends to ask questions extemporaneously in a way that someone who has a background as a talk show host or as a professor may, in a way that a lot of the senators don't. So if you watch the hearing when you actually get a close enough shot of a senator, a lot of them are reading off of questions that either they prepared or their staff prepared. King has notes, I'm sure, but he is always listening to the hearing, mm-hmm. which allows him to jump in and say something like, Director Coates, what's the legal basis for your not answering this question in a way that not all senators do, because some of them are sort of too scripted to be able to realize that there's actually something that needs to be asked.
Interesting. And Glenn, from your perspective, how would you characterize today? I mean, just, from your legal hat, just your thoughts on the day.
Well, I thought Comey did very well. I thought he, for many people who were watching, it was their first chance to really see him sort of speak out on these issues at length. There's certainly some, questionable points in his overall testimony, but I think on the whole, he came across as the more credible figure, again, in part based on the notes. So I think from the standpoint of people who were, opposed to Trump, I think it was a good day on that front. And I agree that the ends of the spectrum are pretty galvanized, but there's some persuadables in the middle that might have been moved today. I think from the Trump side perspective, I guess you could say, it could have been worse. There were some things that came out, I thought, that the Trump people latched on to quickly, sort of agreeing that he wasn't part of the Russian investigation. And the other thing I thought Trump did better today than he has previously was he didn't really, speak directly to this. No tweets. He had his lawyer come out and make a statement and let him carry the water. I think his son made a couple of tweets. Mm-hmm. But overall, he seemed to, stay out of the fray, which I'm sure the Trump White House would prefer.
But when you talk about the optics of that, for the first time, I mean, certainly Sarah Huckabee Sanders did make a brief statement saying that the president isn't a liar, but we didn't really see her. We saw Mark Cassowitz at the National Press Club responding, a private attorney, not White House counsel, Glenn. You said it could have been worse, but it still looked pretty bad.
Yeah, this was not a good day for the Trump administration, for sure. But I think what you're saying, I think they're going to try and take a page out of the Clinton White House playbook. You know, the Clinton had a lot of issues that popped up. Whitewater, Monica Lewinsky, and all that stuff. In fact, I was working on those hearings when I was a Senate staffer back in those days. One of the things they did was they tried to wall all of that off from the president and the policy people. They brought in a separate lawyer to speak to that issue, a separate media person to speak to that issue, separate staff to deal with it. I think Trump's starting to move in that direction.
But can he? I mean, because the lines are blurred. Dr. Grant, I'll ask you about that. The lines seem to be really, really blurred between, I mean, he did it today.
Right.
But just today.
I don't know that his personality is such that he can stay out of the fray for the duration of this investigation. But I do think it makes sense to be doing these things from a separate place and to be doing it from the press club. Can you imagine the picture of a government employee, a White House staffer, having to stand in the press room and say from the microphone owned by the government of the United States that the president is not a liar? Like, that's crazy. So I think that they are doing the right things and kind of trying to control the image. Is he going to be quiet for 2 years, year and a half? No. Like, I fully expect that by the end of the week, he will be going and saying some things about what happened today, even though it's in his best interest to just be quiet.
You were going to say something, Glenn?
No, I agree completely. The main difference between the Clinton strategy and the Trump strategy is President Clinton was very disciplined and very experienced in government. The other big piece, too, is he'd been president for years by the time things got to that point. He had strong approval ratings among the public. And, you know, he'd gotten to a point where people were like, okay, maybe he had an affair in the White House, but, you know, the economy's great. I don't really care that much about it. Trump doesn't have that kind of relationship that he's established with the public. In fact, he came in office as the least most popular president in ages, and I think his numbers have continued to drop. So it'll be very hard for him to successfully imitate the Clinton strategy.
Niels, I think we know what the members of the committee are thinking, but outside of that, what if you know, what is the Republican leadership saying about the past couple of days? If you've had a chance to speak to them?
Well, Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, had a news conference today where he pretty much literally said that the president just doesn't know how this works, right? That, you know, that he probably just didn't realize that you can't say that there are certain firewalls between the Justice Department, the FBI, and the White House, and telling Comey that the Flynn investigation should be stopped is probably not something that he just didn't realize was a thing that you shouldn't do if you're the president of the United States. So the leadership among the Republicans seems to be taking that approach. What I think will be very interesting is if we look ahead to this weekend, Trump is going to one of his golf courses. It's the club in Bedminster, New Jersey, where he's going, and he's having some events, some private events this weekend. I would be willing to bet that there are going to be tapes or leaks or other reports of conversations that he has in the clubhouse or on the golf course. That even if he manages to stay quiet during the day tomorrow and the Twitter feed stays quiet tomorrow, by the end of the weekend, we'll have some sort of story, Dateline Bedminster, New Jersey, that's going to be worth reading.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you think, Glenn? Are we going to get, an 18-minute digital drop from You know, this is so, you know, for the younger members of this conversation, you just don't know what it was like back in 1973. And I got to tell you, even though the issues are different, the process is the same. It looks the same. It smells the same. It sounds the same. We just haven't had that, quote unquote, Watergate moment yet, Glenn.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, the challenge, I think, for Trump, and frankly, I don't think he's up to the task, but he's got to start learning from his mistakes, number one, and correcting them. Number two, he keeps undermining his staff people, so he's had trouble bringing in people who can really say to him, you know what, that's a bad idea. I don't think you should do that. In fact, I don't think he's got anybody in his inner circle right now who can do that, with the possible exception of his daughter. And she's not in the mix enough to do it as often as this guy needs it. So I think he's in trouble. I think the only question is, you know, what's the end going to be? How bad is it going to be? I don't know that he gets impeached, but I think you're looking at a real train wreck of a presidency so far.
I think Niels makes an important point. So if we're thinking about like how this is different than 1973, one of the important ways it's different is like Twitter.
Yeah.
So like, is it possible to shake down all the employees and all the people who are going to come and visit or otherwise be in earshot of these folks all weekend so that nobody has anything? And I just think that's impossible. Like, I don't know that 2 years could pass without him saying anything to anybody that's not recorded and immediately dropped for public consumption or for a bunch of money to a news agency or TMZ or I don't know who might drop a story. But I just think that he has a long way to go. I agree that he doesn't have the ability or the discipline to get where he needs to go, and I expect that this is going to get worse sooner than later.
Well, you know, and again, here's a little history for you, and Gwen, I'm going to take you way back in these last few seconds. Either you had to wait for the Washington Post or New York Times in the morning, or here in Washington, you had to wait for something called the Evening Star.
Okay.
That's right. You remember that?
Yes, I used to deliver the Evening Star.
Yeah, see, there you go. Snow on the roof, but hey, brains between those ears. Evening Star building was right off of 395, as a matter of fact. On the other side, the Mandarin Hotel is on one side. Evening Star was on the other. So there you go. I'm old, but I still know stuff. Listen.
We're still here, though.
Yeah, we are still here. Niels Lesniewski, Dr. Kenesha Grant. Of course, we want to thank Donald Temple and Glenn Ivey. Thank you all so much for sharing with us. We are going to continue watching. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, June 8th. I'm Harold Fisher. Follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR or at Daily Drum WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR.